for some of the great things that happened to that country. But we never had people come into this country who weren't Irish or who weren't European, only in recent times. And it has changed the country, from my own thoughts, in a better way. Ireland is struggling a lot with acceptance of these changes, as I think a lot of countries would be. But so our mission, I guess, here as a community station is find all these minority groups, and they find us. We have three or four of them. We have a program from the continent of Africa catering for the African community, and there's a big African community here in Cork. We have, like I said earlier, the Polish program. There's a big Polish program, a big Polish population here. We have Famida, who's originally from Pakistan but living in Cork, and she would be promoting empowerment of all immigrant groups and women and everything else. So that's three of our programs, but we also do music programs, we do chat programs, we do storytelling programs. We provide the best diversity that we possibly can in the short period of time that we're broadcasting. It reflects what's going on in our community, in our city as it develops.
And seeing that you are a diverse community radio station, I see on your pages that you have Africa Day Cork. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, Africa Day Cork was I suppose an organization that set up. The leader of the organization was a girl named Gigi. I think she's from, I'm not sure where she's from in Africa, but she's originally from Africa, but she's living in Cork for a number of years. And they started a day, Africa Day, and they go into the park down here. It's called Fitzgerald's Park, and it's a public park. And they'd have food, and they'd have music, and they'd have art, and they'd have culture from Africa. And people would go on, they'd, take part in the whole thing, and they'd mingle and mix with everybody. And it was really successful. So it's gone from a day to a week, and it's a week-long event. And it's just a good way of integrating because, there's so much movement around the world. There's always fears of immigrants coming into your country. There's always the negativity of what's going to happen in your country, that the people living there feel they're going to lose their traditions, their cultures are going to be infringed upon. This is Ireland now. Again, not a country that was attractive to a lot of people to come live in it, only since the last probably 10 to 20 years. So in certain parts of Ireland, there was that fear. And I will say, to a certain extent, it wasn't, I don't want to say it was racist, because it wasn't. It was just a fear of the unknown. But over time, that fear has subsided because people have gotten to know the new Irish, as we call them, and their contribution to Ireland. And, they're having children now, and those children are Irish, and they're speaking the Irish language. And but it was a slow transition. So again, community radio, because none of the other stations, none of the other public outlets, even the newspapers, are, in my opinion, doing enough to promote the, I suppose, the positive things of a diverse population. I picked up those things when I lived in San Francisco, because, like I said, San Francisco was so cosmopolitan. The population there was so diverse. Yes, a lot of them from the Pacific Rim countries, the Asian countries, but nonetheless, it's still very diverse. And you could see, without a doubt, that diversity in a population is a strength. So that's why those programs are so important to us in community radio. And so that's why we've kind of asked those people to get involved. And another thing with community radio, it's just not asking, let's say, Mary, or let's get Mary to come in and, do a program for the Polish community. Now, if Mary is not really involved with the Polish community, it's a Polish person doing a Polish program. If Mary's involved in the Polish community, in that she knows what's going on, what's the business is going on, who's having a christening, or what business is going on, who's playing what soccer sports, all these things. You have to get a person at that level who's truly involved in the community, because otherwise there's only one individual doing a program basically for themselves. So yeah, that's where I'd say that's at right now.
And, running a community radio station, it isn't easy. So what are some of the biggest challenges your community radio stations like face?
Finance, finance, finance. We are all the time applying for grants from the government. We're all the time looking for sponsorship. We're all the time looking for money to keep things going. And again, that frustrates me because we are providing, like we will hear on the news about integration this and integration that, and but we'll never see any, we'll never hear from those people. Like we provide a platform at a grassroots level, like our Let's Integrate It program, for instance. I think it's a brilliant program because it informs people who are new to the country of their rights, where to go for different services. The whole thing is really a very strong program. You won't hear that on the national broadcaster. You won't hear that on the commercial broadcasters either. And I think that's a shame. I really think it's a shame. But what you will hear is you will hear the complaints about all these people coming into Ireland on the national broadcaster and on the commercial broadcaster. And it's like, come on, you know. I mean, look, let's face it. Bad news still sells newspapers, still gets you good ratings on radio and TV. But the amount of good stuff that's happening, it has to come through community radio, who's always struggling for finance, and it's hard to get the word out there. But we stick with it.
And we stick through it, because at the end of the day, we love what we are doing as people who love radio and doing it for the people. So when going through the socials and connecting with the people, what kind of feedback do you get from your listeners?
We get very positive feedback actually from our listeners now, in fairness. The whole concept of community radios, you might only tune in for one program. So you might only tune in for the jazz program and then you'll tune out again and you mightn't come back until next week. That's the idea of community radio. Community radio is not looking for hundreds of thousands of listeners. We're just looking to provide as much diversity and cater for as many groups in the community that we can in a quality way. So our listeners do communicate with us through Facebook. They communicate through text or WhatsApp. You know, that communication might be looking for another song, or that communication might be that they enjoyed the interview that someone did, or they enjoyed different programs. Like we got two emails recently from Facebook from two people. One person was in Maine in the United States, and the gist of the Facebook notice was, look, I'm not listening to the news over here because the world has gone crazy. I went onto the TuneIn app. I came across your station. My grandparents were from Cork. I love your station. I love the music. I love the stories. So, you know, stuff like that. And it's always good to get feedback, be it positive or negative, but it's always good to get feedback. So I guess that motivates the volunteers as well. And it motivates the station as well, you know?
You mentioned earlier, you touched on the subject of fundraising. Do you have
Yeah.
radiothons at Cork City Community Radio?
Do we have what now, Richard?
A radiothon where you raise money for the station
No,
on.
radiothons are partially non-existent over here. That concept, like that, comes from PBS. No, that doesn't work here. What we normally do is we'd have a fundraiser where we might have a quiz night. It's difficult enough to organize fundraisers. So we might have a quiz night, we might have an 80s night, stuff like that. Generally, the fundraisers are left up to the volunteers because the volunteer is not alone. Like, in order to feel that they're part of the station, like they come up and do their program, but they have to as well be part of the station in that they have to take ownership of it to a certain extent. So they're asked to organize fundraisers. They might be asked to do a few different things throughout the year. They gladly do it because if you didn't have people participating in a community radio station at most levels, it wouldn't be really part of the community. So our volunteers have an understanding that this is a business as well, in that we pay bills and we need to generate money, and they need to be part of that. So they generally do, and they try to get fundraisers. We might sell raffle tickets, like a Christmas hamper or whatever the case may be. But yeah, they do get involved to that extent.
So, would you say, because you're discussing about how social media, people hiding behind screens, there's not really as much human connection. With your quiz nights and 80s nights and your raffle tickets, all these community events, how does that bring your broadcasters and the folks that work and volunteer at the station closer to the listeners and create more of that community feel that you would want with a community station?
I'll tell you, we'd have a guy come in here, do a program at 9 o'clock in the morning. He'd do a program for an hour and he meets the next person coming in at 10 o'clock. He meets the same staff up there and then he goes home. He doesn't get to meet the people that are here Sunday or Monday. So by having a fundraiser, everybody gets to meet everybody. We sometimes just have up there, We just come up and we put on, have a cup of tea, and we might make some sandwiches, and we'll just sit down and just, have a chat about the weather, about sport, just to make sure that everybody is familiar with everybody else and there's a sense of family and a sense of community. And it's important that people feel that connection, get to know who the other people are. And like I said, they build up a friendship and it makes things go a lot smoother in that. Sometimes you're going to get people who are not going to be happy with certain things and they don't know what to say or who to say it to. And, they can get a bit frustrated. And this way, they can talk to a group of people and the people will say, look, God, you should just go ask Donald or you should just go ask this person or that person. And it helps in keeping a very harmonious type of situation in a voluntary group. I don't know whether you guys are members of voluntary groups or not, but sometimes voluntary groups can implode completely because people might not like certain things and they might not be expressing. They might find two or three other people who are like-minded and then, it could get bitter and angry and bang, there goes your volunteer group. So once you're aware that can happen, you kind of remedy the situation through having a fundraiser, but also making it in to a social night for your volunteers and socializing with them. It's like build up a friendship and that way, it serves two purposes. One, it generates good funds for the television or for the radio, beg your pardon, but it also keeps harmony amongst the volunteers and a level of communication open. When they go home, they'll email each other or text each other or whatever. So that's why fundraising, we keep going with it, even though it's only a small part of raising funds for us, but we keep going with it because there's, like I said, there's money comes out of it, but there's also the social aspect.
I would agree with you on that because one of the, because you're talking about all being a part of community radio stations, one of the first things that I kind of did to get involved was I was a student that helped coordinate. We have Irish programming come in on the weekends. And Donald, I just have to say that one of our volunteers is from Cork. So I have to say up Cork for her, for Eileen, because if I didn't, she'd kill me. But that's a different story. But I was saying we had this fundraiser. It was a radiothon and all these people from the Irish community came in and we had guests and singers and dancers and all the students were there and we had sandwiches and it was all this. And we raised money, but we built community and we found connections with each other and we formed friendships. And I think that's kind of a beautiful thing that you touched on, the power of community radio, no matter where you are. But something else that I wanted to touch on was obviously we all have a duty to be voices for the voiceless with our work. How do you cover local government, local elections? What's that like over in Cork?
Well, we're going into politics now, Richard. It's very interesting in that we had a general election here a few months back where we elected a new government, and our station was the only station that covered the election fully. We actually went in an outside broadcast to the count centre and we stayed there for the weekend and we did 16 hours of news and politics, local politics about local people running for government. We interviewed them, we talked to them. We were there for those who got elected. We were there for those who didn't get elected. And people found that absolutely fabulous. Or commercial stations were playing pop music and catering to their group. And again, not everybody would be so interested in politics that they'd listen for 16 hours, but that's not the point. If you just want to tune in for a few hours or for a few minutes and get the gist of what's happening and get informed at a grassroots level, that's what can happen. But politics is a big part of what we do because no matter how you slice it or dice it, a politician affects your life. And that's the bottom line. You might think it doesn't, you might think he or she doesn't, but politics affect your life. And it's a big, big part of the world today. There's more and more opinions of life beginning to come to the surface. And there's more and more within politics. I think it's unfortunate. There's somewhat of a rush to shut down the voices of some people whose opinions might be different to yours. We don't go into that. Now, let me just make it clear. I'm not talking about far right individuals here, or I'm not talking about far left individuals. I'm talking about people who might have a genuine disagreement with you on a political issue. And like here, they can be shut down. They can be shut down by the media and the other press. With us, they're not shut down. They can come in and they can talk about it. Because if you shut someone down and they have a genuine need to express their opinion and be respected for their opinion, you mightn't agree with it, and you shut them down and you don't give them access, they become angry and they become bitter. And the next thing you know, you're dealing with a person that has gone from a reasonable stance to a person who won't budge at all in their views. And it becomes like, two opposing sides because nobody's listening to anybody. Nobody's giving anybody the opportunity to come in and speak or be heard without also giving their opinion. It's a mess. So we do try very hard to ensure from a political and I suppose current affairs and news, which I enjoy, we ensure that we do bring people in and we give them their say and we question them and we question them pretty rigorously. I mean, they're not coming in and getting a free open microphone. But yeah, so we do that as well. And I think, again, because the world is in such turmoil and has been for a long, long time, those kind of things begin to frighten me. Free speech is a big thing, not just in America, but it's a big thing around the world. And in any place that calls itself a democracy, you have to have free speech. And nobody said that free speech, in order to keep it going, is easy. And I get the times where there has to be, people talk about restrictions on free speech. You guys come over here and you go to Normandy, you'll see a lot of headstones of English and American and French, Italian and soldiers that died in the Second World War. That the reason for that was part of that was, to keep free speech and keep freedom of expression. And I know sometimes people get angry because they say, oh, he shouldn't be allowed to say that or she shouldn't be allowed to say that. Well, if you don't give him a platform to talk about it in a respectful manner, you're making the situation even more difficult. This is my opinion. You would be making the situation more difficult if a person doesn't get the opportunity to say what they want to say. Now, having said all that, I have to underline here, when I do a program on news and current affairs, I'm governed by regulations by our broadcasting authority here on the subject matter and in what we can do. We have to be careful here that we don't incite anybody, that we don't encourage any illegal activities, or we don't encourage anything like that. So we have to be pretty careful as regards that. But generally, that's the way I feel on that, Richard. Community radio is not just, oh, we'll just go with part of a community. You have to go with the good, the bad, and the ugly of the community. And you have to find a way, if you're a journalist or if you're on community radio, of you have to find a way, sit down and think of a way to get those people on the radio and without creating, a whole lot of trouble for the station or for your community. And it is possible, but it takes some time to think it through.
What would you say, Donald, because obviously covering local aspects, you want to get you local, you give different slices of life, different opinions, different voices. You have the Let's Integrate show, which I think is a very cool thing that separates you guys, because you were saying it's all about having a positive view of all these different people, of all these different walks of life, and accepting one another. How do you promote these views and that feeling during the Let's Integrate program?
And again, I think the Let's Integrate program is promoting views, and they're doing a very good job of it. And by promoting those views, the community is listening and asking two questions. This is great that this has been done, one answer. Two is, why does this program have to exist? People would want an answer to that. But the Let's Integrate it program, again, like I said, Richard, we've got to understand here that it's a whole open community. The Let's Integrate it program is super doing what it does for that people in the community who need that and support that. But there's other members in the community would say, well, why do we need that program? What's going on there? And they equally deserve an answer as to, well, this is why we feel we need that program. If if you have a big community and you want to come in and talk about something, come in and talk about it. What I'm trying to say is we're not going to cause deliberate division within a community by only putting on X programs and not Y programs. As hard as it is to balance, we have to try to balance it just like a community. So there's nothing easy when it comes to community radio about doing that. But it's something that we have to do. And yes, I see very positive things coming out of Let's Integrate. I see very positive people coming in talking about it. I hear the hardships that some people go through when we bring in academics from UCC who will talk about immigration, when we bring in people from voluntary organizations like St. Vincent de Paul, who are charities that help people in hardship. It's good. That's the good side of it, you know. And then there's probably the other side of it for some people. I won't say it's the bad side of it, but you know, they're wondering why is there a need for this type of program? Do you understand?
I understand, but it's good that you provide on your station give and take and room for all different opinions
Yeah,
in the community.
100%. I know it sounds like a bit of a contradiction, Richard, and you would be right in saying that it almost contradicts. But again, like, there's no community, no matter where you are. I mean, you'd be living in a cloud of dreams if you were to think that it's all nirvana and it's all great and everybody's getting on, and not recognizing the fact that there's a certain percentage of the community are doing that and they're striving and that's what they want to do. There's other parts of the community. And again, the other parts of the community are not right wingers or extreme right wingers. There's a certain amount of it, just the fear of the unknown. Some of these people over a period of time will kind of say, God, I didn't know what I was worried about. The worries are like this, Richard. Our healthcare system, right? It's at its max capacity, and people are coming into the country and they're saying, how are we going to deal with that? Or schools for young people are at max capacity. How are we going to deal with that? There's a lot of these questions that people are concerned about. And again, it at the end of the day comes back to government. But with us, with our community radio station, we try to say, like, well, just relax a little minute now. Let's talk. Because if everybody knows everybody's point of view, they mightn't necessarily agree with it, but you know, they might think, okay, there's another point of view that I've got to understand and I've got to respect that. And that's a big starting point. If you could get two people who are on opposite sides of the table but respect each other's point of view, that's a huge step. That's a huge step, because generally they don't. Generally they'll, you know, call each other names and they'll say, or you know, X, Y, and Z back and forth. And that's not what we try to do. We're not trying to change the world here. We're not doing it on a very big scale. We're doing it on a very, very small scale. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Sometimes it is the small steps that lead to a greater future for everybody down the road. So,
100%.
on that note, Donald, we thank you very much for coming on our show today,
Thanks very much, lads, and the best of luck with it.
promoting all these wonderful themes and the power of community radio and all the good work that you folks at Cork City Community Radio do for people in the States and in all over the world who are listening to the show in South Africa and Pittsburgh, everybody who'd want to listen to this, where can they find you guys?
Well, I guess the best place to find what we do is go to our website, which is simple. It's cr.ie. And on the website, they'll get a list of our programs. They'll also get a big playlist of podcasts from all our programs, which are up on Mixcloud. And they can listen back to some programs there and just sample the flavor of what we do. On the weekends, we stream live, and we have programs going from Saturday until Monday. So that would definitely be the best place to go and check us out.
Well, Donald, thanks so much for coming on. You have been listening to the One World Radio Show on 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa, 88.3 WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech, and 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station. The
listening to the One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Radio Show.
Good morning to you all. I hope everybody is good. Hi, how's everybody? Actually, let me ask, how's everybody doing?
I'm all right, Lydia. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. So today we are joined by Ongeziwe Bolisi, a visionary leader who believes the greatest education comes from within. As a founder of Inyati, the legend, he has dedicated himself to unlocking hidden potential in others across literacy, nonprofit, and religious spheres. Working tirelessly behind the scenes, this published author and innovative thinker doesn't just see people for who they are, but for who they have the potential to become. So please, let's welcome a true catalyst for human potential, Ongeziwe Bolisi. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, I'm good. And thanks for having me.
Amazing. Awesome. So I'd like us to start from the beginning, right? Like, what was your childhood like? And were there any early experiences that shaped your passion for storytelling and leadership?
Yes. I grew up in the village that was mocked by other villages by other villages in my surrounding area, but we didn't realize the potential that the village has, because all these villages that mocked us used to, you know, joke about my village that is backward. They were depending on my village when it comes to natural resources. Growing up as a village boy, most of the time you go. During the plantation season, being shepherd to look after the stock. So that's where I've learned leadership. That leadership is not always about being in front and eloquent. Sometimes you lead from the back, as the shepherd lead from the back. So I think that's what shaped me to become the leader that I am today.
What was the specific moment or influence in your life that made you realize that you actually wanted to become a writer and publisher?
My friend, who is a preacher, used to say to me, no matter how talented you are, at some point, the Almighty need to send someone to you to unlock the gift that is within you. I can say myself, I was redirected. I never knew that I will be a writer, a storyteller. My passion was football. And then when I was at Matric, there was this teacher that made education to be interesting. So to me, it was that teacher, Xhosa teacher, who made me to realize and love literature and discover the purpose that is and the gift that is within me. So it was when I was doing my matric 2013 at a school called Manzo Mtombo here in Cape Town. So from there, I believe that you don't have to show the talent if it's not yet matured. So I always go to, after I've discovered, I went to libraries that were around to read more so that I can empower myself to become a better writer. So that's where I discovered that, you know, as us, as authors of today and the authors of olden days, we still, our content is not that powerful as compared to those guys. Yet those guys didn't have the equipment and the resources that we have. So it is when I was doing my matric where I discovered that I actually am a writer.
Right. Many writers and publishers, like, they have a story behind the first book or project. So what was your first big break in the industry and how did it come up?
It's when I wrote my second book called Uthando Galotani. It's the most selling one. So this book I wrote, I made observation that, you know, in we as Xhosas, as African, there's a high number of divorces. Yet, if you go to our history and our ancient knowledge and time, you'll find that there were less divorces. You'll find that someone could be a polygamist, yet they're still together. So I made that observation, and then I check what is it that made us to be a divorcing country or nation. So the book is not about the love, only romance, but also the love as upbringing. You would know as Xhosa person that even if your parents, they love you, but they will never, there are things that they will never tell you. So it's when I wrote that second book, it was in 2020. Yeah, that's where people started to know me.
And can you tell me, you know, because as an Antika, as an author, you're also a mentor, right? So what unique challenges do you face, right, when mentoring leaders across such diverse fields as well?
Most of people, they lack self-awareness. I don't blame them, because most of the time we are born, and then by a certain age, and then you go to primary school. From primary school, you go to secondary, tertiary, and then after university or tertiary, you have other university, which is yourself, instead of introducing people to themselves. So most of the time, when I work with leaders and young leaders and elder leaders who have been leading in those organizations, you'll find that people lack self-awareness. You'll find that they end up destroying what was good for them. Like, for instance, just because you can be logical and able to be eloquent, it doesn't mean that you are right most of the time. So these are the challenges that I come across with those that are old. And then when it comes to the young ones, they think leadership is about themselves, but leadership is about the people. We are working on the project now. There's this guy, young, famous guy, you took a photo. We once spoke about Lungsani Mjaji, because we are trying to change this narrative of autobiographies that are only written by old people. So we're trying to bring new stories of young people who have done amazing things. So it's few.
So Ikreation Yakhona, how did it come about?
Yeah, the inspiration, as the slogan say, we are because of them. I am because of those who have paved the way for me. I am because of those one who have instilled knowledge and the wisdom within me. So I believe that it was an inspiration from my bringing in knowledge. As I said, that I was mentored also by people who are elder than me, by elders. So it came from that. When it comes to the logo, if you see the logo, there was one guy who was the businessman within my family, was the richest guy in my hometown. That's where I learned business and leadership to those elders. So it came from those elders that I've been privileged enough to work with and also to meet with.
Ongi Ziwe, my question, going back to when you were discussing your work as an author, what would you say would be the creative process when coming up with these stories and distributing it to the public? How do you come up with how you're going to do it?
In South Africa now, we grew up in a times where there were those big publishers. And then there's as you know, that we have traditional and self-publication. So my first book, was funded by one of the government institutions, Center for the Book, under National Library of South Africa. So there, if they approve your book, you don't pay anything. They do a launch for you, and then they give you, all the bulk of a book, maybe 400, 500, and then you sell it for yourself without a middleman. So that's where I started to learn about marketing, publishing, and distribution.
How did you guys in South Africa break away from this concept of needing the big publishers to kind of doing things more independently? What's that process like? Because it can't be easy.
First of all, there's no regulation that prevents you from not being a self-published and independent distributor. But you'll find that when it comes to bookstores, it's easy. If your book, they like your book. And then when you go to the big institution like your government departments and university libraries, it becomes difficult and a little bit trickier because there's a blueprint and sometimes not everyone is having experience when it comes to administration. Therefore, you'll need someone who have expertise when it comes to administration and able to register you on those government administration. But you are allowed, regardless how big or small you are. Most of the time, that's why I come in as my company, because most of the people, they do not have time to do those things of registration and register to this big institution and other university. So it is easy because there's no regulation that prevents you. As long as you have time and information, which is the people that are around you who are expertise when it comes to those areas.
Now, you kind of touched before about when you were growing up, this wasn't really something that appealed to you. What would you say is a way that you now in your current work try to mentor youth who might have that same approach? I'm going to play football. I'm going to do this. I'll play sports. And turn them to saying that, no, this is really important and you should be involved in literature and writing and reading. How do you appeal that to other people?
Can you elaborate more on your question?
How do you kind of, the way that you were mentored when you were younger, how it made you feel, how do you try to impose that feelings on other people?
I would say I have this method that I'm using. I do not force my knowledge to people. So I believe that the people that I'm mentoring, I'm called to. So it becomes easy for me to engage with someone that I'm called to. At some point, just because we have this knowledge and this power and this status, we think that we are called to everyone and we are not patient enough. So for me, to every audience or where I'm invited, it becomes easy because I feel like it's the right time and there are no challenges. So most of the time I get invitation to different platforms, your schools and other relevant organization. And also because I don't know, most of the time, something amazing when it comes to my work, sometimes I do not invited to something that is relevant to what I'm doing. In fact, that I'm invited to something that is totally irrelevant from what I'm doing. Like, for instance, last month I was invited by this young doctor to his group that is he's having a program for his patient, young patient who are suffering with TB and HIV, and then invite me to speak on his program. And you'll find that at some point, you don't have to be in the space of literature. I always say that a good writer is not someone who writes for the people who are already conditioned to read, for nerds. A good writer is someone who influences the ignorant to read. Therefore, it becomes easy to me when I'm being invited to speak some, because someone will realize that there's something within it, the knowledge, and then we'll start to follow up. That's where I start to begin to have a conversation and share my number. So it is not that difficult. I don't know whether I've answered your question, but I've tried.
No, you have answered. And something you said that was really profound, I felt, was that you're trying to appeal to get a new audience into it, that you're not trying to appeal to kind of the status quo. How would you say people like you break away from that? How does that work? Because that could be a bit difficult, I feel. But you might say that's also very easy because you're pretty good at this, I must say.
No, for me, at a very young age, I'm a last born at home. I'm a last born. And I believe that I was not planned because I'm Ongezi. I'm added among the men. Yet my parents were, they are only two girls and then four guys. So they were expecting a girl. So for that point, I think it helped me a lot to able to walk a lonely journey at a very young age. So when you are alone, it is easy to you get to discover a lot of things about your creativity. As I'm sitting with you, as I'm talking with you now, I'm doing the diverse thing, and most of them, they ask, how do I manage to do a lot of things within a short period of time? For me, it's able to embrace the journey and all the challenges and just take everything. Don't be beating up yourself because of the rejection and failures that occur along the way. As I was speaking with my mentor last week, stating that, you know, as I'm entering, there's an award that I'm invited to enter. I said to him, you know, I'm reflecting on my journey. I never won any award to everything that was good at, even at football. I still remember in Cape Town, I was a leading goal scorer in all the schools that were playing at a tournament called Metsipe Foundation Tournament. But I never got reward up until I get redirected. Also, here on literature, I never get any award for all these competition. But you will find that all these people that get awarded, they consult to me. They are using my services. It's a matter of knowing that whatever that you do, you are doing for greater cause. To me, my journey is amazing. Even when I look back, I just reflect and say, wow, I've managed to stand the test of time.
How do you kind of get that belief system in your own head? Because that's very much easier said than done, that it's about the journey. I haven't been recognized. No one's... Because that's kind of something you look... We all look for recognition in our lives, no matter what field we're in. And if we're not getting recognized for, oh, you did a great job, you look for the attaboy, the attagirl. How do you feel that you could still forge on? How'd you teach yourself to forge on, even when it appeared that you weren't maybe necessarily being recognized or weren't getting?
I think we do things for different reasons. For me, as I'm saying that, it's not, I do not like what I'm doing. You know, I'm calling you embrace and obey. So it's not something that I like. It's something that I'm called for. So most of the time, people that recognize me, you'll find that my book, because one of the author would say, given opportunity to speak somewhere, we do not only share those writing and we share our soul. You can sense me through my book. Therefore, each and every time when I hear someone, especially on TikTok, because I have a lot of followers on TikTok, stating that, you know, your book have changed. When I've hear people, the tears of people crying when they've read my poem, when I hear people get empowered through my writings, that's why I say that I don't care about the mainstream recognition. In literature, there are books that are called classics. You'll find that there are books that will only last for this season. And then there are books that will last, they'll be relevant to all the season. So when you are doing things that will be relevant to all season, you don't yearn for mainstream recognition. As you go to academics, that's where it becomes interesting, because on academics, you'll find that when you do a research, you'll find that the thinkers and the scholars will discover something that was not noticed back then. Like on course, there's this book, there's this poet that was not recognized, that was not well known. So we have to rewrite and challenge what is already existing. That's the interesting part about the world of thinkers and researchers. You are able to challenge what was put in front of what you knew before.
And Ongesiwe, listening to you, and you know how passionate you talk about the work that you're doing, like it's a calling, like you're saying, it's a calling, it's a gift that you are giving the people. You're doing it out of love. You're not looking at it as you want to be recognized. And amongst Londo, you've described yourself as multitasking every day. You know, there's something that you're doing. There's something that you're pushing. How do you manage your time and energy while juggling so many responsibilities?
For me, it comes naturally. There's a preacher, one of the guys who is also a thinker, you would know, Joshua Maponga. There's this last sermon that he preached, the worship, life in the spirit. You know, at some point, we operate on a... As human being, we operate at a normal sense. However, if you can tap to the spirit, you'll find that it's easy to do other things. And you look back and say, it was me. For me, it becomes easy to manage things, to do things within a day, different things, and able to talk with different people. So also my bringing as a guy from village, I have a life upbringing of the village. I have a upbringing of a township. I have an upbringing of the city. So I can able to talk with someone who come from the city. I can able to talk with someone who come from township. I can able to talk with someone who is from the village. So I also apply that also to my task to talk with different characters or people who come from different environment aspect. It's possible also to do your tasks that are different within a short period of time.
And going to back to Inyathi, the legend, right? So you work with Winsor, you do podcasts, you do mentorship. So with the people that you're working with, how was the selecting process? Like, how did you choose your people that you're working with? Are they creatives? Are they how is your group of people that you're working with?
As you said when you were introducing me, I believe that, you know, you cannot teach. It's a quote from someone which I do not know. He said that you cannot tell a man anything. You just help him to find within. So you'll find that most of the people that are on my company, they are so self-taught. They never went to school. There's a guy called Darren. Darren is the one doing graphic design. He never studied graphic design. He studied filming. He's good on graphic and layout design of the books, and also with marketing and advertisement. He never went to school. So I only select people who are creative, also who are willingness. And if you do not have a skill or talent, but willingness, if the willingness is there, because I believe that you can train someone with good attitude.
Yeah, cool. But I can hear what you are saying. So I want to know, right, through your journey, right, from everything that you've been through, from Coca-Cola, right through ABBA, I want to know, looking back, is there like a particular success stories that stands out? Okanye, someone who potentially you've helped unlock dreams as ABBA or the way they are?
Yeah, there are numerous people that have assisted. I have student at Nelson Mandela University. They publish under my company. And I've seen people putting bread on their table. I've plugged. In South Africa, sorry, Richard, we use this term plugging people when it comes to connect people, when it comes to networking and connecting to people to each other. There's a book by Tim Sender. It said, Love is a Killer App. They say that when you represent knowledge, you are an asset. You introduce people to people that they never thought they would meet. You introduce books that they never thought or read, never thought that they would read. You know, so there are students at university. There's this foundation that funds learners who are doing great, but coming from poor background. I was asked to be an academic mentor to their competition. I have two students who are coming from deep informal settlement that now they're at university, UCT. The other one is at UCT. It was part of that program. The other one is from is studying at Stellenbosch. He's also coming from informal settlement. And also elders to churches. Sometimes they write speeches and to those local politicians and so on. So they are, the list goes on and on to different environment.
And through Elife Yako, you know, you have been giving a service, Yako, like you said, it's a calling, and once you're called to do something, you just render services without having to expect something in return. So what have you learned from your journey, and, you know, what advice would you give to others facing similar barriers in their own industries?
You mean by someone who's starting his journey?
Yes. As in, ukuzijonga wena, where you're from, right? And, you know, journey up, or like advice to someone that's looking up to you through similar challenges that wena you've gone through. What advice would you give?
For me, it's, I would say, when it comes to something that you want to achieve, I would say just consistent is very vital. and know that, question yourself, able to interrogate yourself, why you are doing what you are doing. Are you following people? Same at school. Most of the time at school, we look at the student that are getting higher marks. And most of the time, it's so sad, teachers, they do not teach at those school, those learners that are doing well, that there's also other life where you'll be challenged, where you'll be no board, where you'll get zero. And most of the time, most of people, they base confidence on something that they do. Don't do something just because you want to be seen. Build yourself, have a confidence without those things. Therefore, when you get disappointed, you can able to leave and say, I'm still me, I'm still living my life. Then when it comes to talent, as you are saying this in this question, I think when it comes to entrepreneurship, or you do something, if people, there are many people that are being sent to you, then means your services are good. Therefore, that's where you start charging. So most of the young people, they want to charge high prices, yet there's a higher competition. So first look, observe how many people that are being sent to you because of what you are doing before you charge people. That has been my approach. So after I've realized that now there are institutions and individuals that are being sent to me, that's where I started to take my craft seriously. It's able to be strategic and able to have a confidence before without using what your gift or your materials in this journey.
Ongi Ziwe, since you mentioned that you are a teacher and how you mentor different students, how would you say in your role as an assistant professor, how does your teaching style differ from some of the other professors who are in the room or in the building rather?
I once assistant lecturer, and then sometimes I get those foundation that help student. Sometimes they invite me to mentor their learners with their program, because you find that there are foundation that will take students from different schools, and then they'll have a competition. Maybe they'll set a topic in return. A student, if a learner, maybe it's a terminology that I've used, a learner won amount of money so that they can implement the program that they were competing about.
You are a life coach with the soccer academy, or you did life coaching in the past. What was that? Because we hear these terms in the States, life coach, and no one really knows exactly how to pinpoint it. How would you describe it and the work that you did?
For me, life coaching, it's about introducing people to themselves, able to study themselves instead of teaching them how to acquire things. Because I believe it's easy to acquire. It becomes more easier to acquire whatever that you want in the world if you have discovered yourself. So most of the time, I help people act and able to understand themselves, their emotions and so on, and able their potential.
You've mentioned throughout the whole time that we've been discussing these lessons that you teach in your mentorship and your life coaching. How did you learn those lessons yourself in order to implement that into your teaching?
Most of the time, each and every day, I'm very intentional about my growth. So there are people who read just for leisure. Most of the time, I read to implement. I take inspiration from different people and use to what I'm doing. You'll find that you are doing something that is totally different, but you'll find that you inspire me to do some certain things on what I'm doing. So I extract inspiration from different people who are doing amazing on their field. Same applies. Not every book is a good book. So same applies to people. I always look the best, those who are doing excellent on their field, and use their knowledge on my calling.
You've discussed this concept of a calling the whole time. I always associate a calling with religious life and kind of your call by God to do something. How do you, it's going to sound so stupid or strange, but how did you feel this calling? What was the moment where you were like, I have to do this?
It started when I was at varsity doing my first year. There was, which is still my mentor, a preacher that used to come. You know how churches function. You'll find that there is someone who will be sent to preach in different areas. But this one, his assignment was to preach to students. He used to say to us, guys, he used to call us on Friday to attend his service on Friday. Remember, we're stressing and the assignment and the test. He said, guys, I know that you only see now you're stressing about the test. You'll graduate. But after graduation, after getting the job, then what next? So he introduced me to his preaching. Were not that religious do's and don'ts, but he used to speak on our level, using the Bible on our level. So that's where I discover I able to master my talent and able to unlock the gift that I have, because it was someone who was coming from corporate world. He was he's a CEO owner running a global consultant, chairperson in one of the big stadium here in Cape Town. So it helped me a lot because he could easily relate to us. He was also head of talent to other companies. I won't mention name. So that's where I discover my talent and my calling.
What would you say? Because you speak very passionately about it. Did you ever have moments of doubt along the way and skepticism where you were like, I don't know if I should do this. I don't know if this is right. What if I made a terrible mistake?
Not really. It only happened when when you are used to something. I was used at football. And then when I got injured, I was playing for agent team. So I got injured. They sent me to other professional leagues, lower league here in South Africa. And then this thing was started to getting serious of this thing of writing. But on the other side, the career of football was promised by that on that time where it was difficult to choose between football and it. But after I've obeyed and accepted it, I never had time. The only time that I have, it's when I question myself, is it the right time to do it? Because sometimes you overdo things, even if it's not a good season. So sometimes I align myself. I make sure that alignment is very important so that it can be impactful.
You also happen to work with the city of Cape Town. How?
Yeah.
It's very, you say yes. It's very different from the other kind of work that you do. Or maybe it's not all that different, the way that you approach that work. How do you approach that job versus your work in literature and your mentorship work?
First, literature is a calling. So therefore, it's difficult to self-empower myself when it comes to it. And then when it comes to working in government, I have a degree on public administration in government. Public management was known as public management. So I have a knowledge and a background of government. So it becomes easy to compress the two, leadership and my experience on working on government. Because I also write some few academic papers on government and politics. So I was once passionate with academics and politics and so on. I don't find it difficult to balance it, because even if you can study academic or public administration, you still need to know the leadership part. So when it comes to literature, when I'm at work, I'm doing my job. When I'm at home, I focus on my literature. So it's not that easy. It's not that difficult. As the one speaker would say that when we go to those institutions or to corporate world or to render a service somewhere, we take our company to a company. So you are a working factory. I approach myself as a working factory. So before I get employed, I'm also a factory. So I take my factory to a factory. So when I come back, I can do other things. As I said to you, that I approach myself as a building with different departments. And so I don't know whether I've answered you.
No, you're fine, Ozzy. You're fine. I wanted to, because a lot of people here in the States, when they discuss their work in government, and it's called public service sometimes, they describe that as a noble calling. Do you feel that same? You kind of elaborate that you necessarily don't feel that same calling with your work in government.
No, it's a calling. As you are saying, in South Africa, we say we are public servants. We
We you're serve public the public. Servants. You're serving.
Yeah, we.
You're public we, servants. What does yeah, that we, kind of? So, really, what I wanted to say was, does one area maybe mean more to you than another in your work? Or
no.
Do people bounce themselves out in different ways? Describe that, because you have a lot of different passions. You're all over the place. I'd get exhausted watching you.
it is. All of them, because bear in mind, as I said to you at the beginning, that I always, it becomes easy for me when I know that I'm being called to a certain things to do. And I also said to you, the only time when I find it difficult when it comes to the passion, the calling, it's when I ask myself whether is it the right time to do it. So most like, for instance, I can make an example now. If you can like employ me to work on your radio station or to partner with you on a radio station, the first question to me is it the right time to do it? Is it going to be impactful if I do it now? I'm doing it for instant gratification. So even at work, if I can tell you a story about how I became a coordinator, you'll be amazed. We were employed as compliance officers. We were 10. Compliance officers, we work with, we make sure that informal trading, they comply. We are the one who are issuing permits and also regulate informal trading. They noticed something to me. And they said, we want you to lead those that we employ with you. I was appointed. I was not employed. So there's a difference between being employed and appointed, which is there's something within you that they saw. So it was, I don't want to talk about my, but I came to a structure that was very challenging. That's where your leadership skills are being challenged, where you find that there's no structure and you have to make sure that there's a structure and a strategy and people work together, they're able to handle your conflict professionally. So I approach everything as a gift to serve, an opportunity to serve. There's nothing that I say I'm just doing for a sake. Most of 80% of my time I spend alone. So whenever I go to people or invited somewhere, you will sense something, that there's something within that person. My mentor used to say, the greatest sermon is not the one that is verbal. It's when you keep quiet and someone notice something within you and start speaking, because bear in mind, communication, it's not only verbal. You'll feel something within you, also with the vibrations. All science will speak about vibration and so on. So I approach everything as an opportunity to serve. So I don't say my way. I love my work more than I love my. I'm more on my passion than my work. My work is also my passion. It also depends where I am employed to serve.
So I want to know, you know, like with so many projects on your plate, leadership, coaching, podcasting, and many more, right? So what part of your work brings you the most personal fulfillment and why?
Writing poetry. I don't feel like doing it. I feel like I'm done when after writing. It's when I've wrote something. Yeah, I can say so for now. Oh. For now.
So there's still many more that is coming from
the thing is, the thing, we're not animals. We are not meant to do the one thing. You'll find that this year you are good at this, and tomorrow that's the reason why we prevent growth and other expertise that come along our way, because we define ourselves about what we already doing or what is existing. So I can say for now it's when I've wrote and then play with visual and recorded my poem and then hear the reaction of people being touched, and also those who read my books and so on. So I can say for now, because next year I might change, or even June I might say, hey, there's new Ongeziwe now. Hence I always encourage people, especially those religious people, don't follow a leader critically. We were taught adversity to be critical thinkers, critical readers. Don't follow a person just because you follow a musician because he produced music. That is good. Don't follow a musician just because you love that music, that the musician is a stranger that you do not know. Same applies to, if you're in South Africa now, there's a big team now called Kaizer Chiefs. It's a big team, a big brand, but it's losing. Fans are crying each and every day. It's more like they're in an abusive relationship, but those people, they do not give opportunity to other soccer teams that are in their areas. So for me, yeah, I approach my life that way.
As you're constantly changing as a person,
yeah,
you're not...
As a person, you, yeah.
Yeah, and looking ahead, you know, what's your vision for the future, talking about Inyathi the legend, Obanye, even yourself as Ongezi?
Let's talk about Inyathi, but when it comes to me, I just allow things to happen, you know. On Inyathi, we are trying to, as I stated to you, on Inyathi, we started getting attention now to different stakeholders. So we are trying to write, I think we're going to produce more books that of young people, autobiography of young people who have done amazing on their space, because we grew up reading autobiography of politicians, even if they are not big, but the impact is important on those books because it's a young person, obviously. So we're trying to do that now, looking at the young people who have done amazing and search for ghostwriters for them to write their stories and their books. And also, yeah, we are looking forward to also to work with different and also diverse with organization. And so, yeah.
That's absolutely amazing to hear, Ongeziwe. And yeah, just before I let you go,
I need to go somewhere. No, it's not. I'm yours. I've just surrendered. I'm yours.
No, like, thank you for joining us, Namhlanje. And just to Gqibela, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure to turn our, like, because you are like, you have a lot, you know, that's going on. So it's quite fresh, refreshing. You don't see a challenge as a challenge. You see it as an opportunity to grow. So what is something that you'd like to leave, the legacy that you have? So for someone, you know, inzala yakhozayo, what is it that you leave behind? You know, this is a recipe ka Ongeziwe, and that I've left for the world and for my children.
I would say I've on a literature space, I've already influenced people that I used to look up to. Now they look up to me. I've come with my innovative, because bear in mind, you know, you're in South Africa. Reading was associated to people who are doing well academically, but I believe that education is not something. We are educated before we go to institution. So I've done something amazing. My books have been purchased by ordinary people, but the content is being consumed by people who are ordinary. People can relate my content on that on its own. It's a history that I've made. And also with the book on its own, I would say my kids will be in my family proud to say, in this village that I'm coming from, I use that. There's my book called Ingoma Yendalo, The Song of the Nature. I use whatever that we thought is not big to us and make it inspirational. Because that book, I use the nature, all the poems that are there, you'll find that I've used the nature to spread the message that I want to on this board. So for me, on my village, it's a work that I'm doing on literature. And also, when people, sometimes success is not about the things that you have achieved, but when my kids or my relative meet people that knew me, it's either at work, they would say, your brother or your father was a good guy. Your brother or your father didn't take things that do not belong to him because he can. That's what I get even